from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Environmentalists were angered last week when President Barack Obama asked the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, to stop development of tougher air quality rules, abandoning stricter ozone pollution standards that the Obama administration had been promising for the past 3 years and instead deciding to stick with Bush-era standards. The president rejected a proposed rule from the EPA that would have significantly reduced emissions of smog-causing chemicals, saying it would impose too severe a burden on industry and local governments at a time of serious economic distress. Joining us is Bruce Nillis, who is Deputy Conservation Director of the Sierra Club. They oversee the coal campaign, and he does, actually. We welcome you to the program. Bruce Nillis, good to have you aboard. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Michael Wang with us, who is Manager of the Cross-Regional Issues and Legal Affairs for the Western States Petroleum Association, also joins us by phone this morning. Welcome, Michael Wang.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Glad to have you. And let me begin, Bruce Nillis, if I may, with you. There is considerable anger and outrage, as I said, by the environmental community. In fact, it's been called a betrayal and worse on the part of the Obama administration. Why?
Well, it's really an unprecedented example of political interference getting in the way of science. When Obama took over 3 years ago, and had appointed Lisa Jackson to head of the Environmental Protection Agency, they promised that after 8 long years under the Bush administration, that science would be back and they would make decisions based on the science. And last Friday, they failed in an unprecedented way by letting politics get in the way of the scientific need to protect people from dangerous levels of air pollution.
Well, could you talk a little more about that scientific need? Because what we're also hearing is that this is really a very important economic matter. The fact is, there are no jobs, and they're protecting jobs, the White House says, and they're also making it easier for industry to do what needs to be done.
Well, that's another piece of why this is so disappointing. The administration really fell into the worn-out, unproven argument that investments in clean energy and protection of clean air don't go hand in hand with protecting people from dangerous levels of air pollution. We have, since 1970, when the Clean Air Act was first passed, demonstrated over and over again, industry always says the sky is going to fall and we're not going to actually see economic progress and we're not going to see jobs. And in fact, the opposite has happened, because if you think about it, in the Bay Area, center of the high-tech business in the United States, what Obama has essentially said is, we're going to hit pause on investments in clean energy because we're not going to continue to update clean air standards that have really been an engine for creating jobs in the clean tech space. And so we see this as actually inconsistent with protecting public health and people who are suffering from asthma in particular, as well as really hurting our efforts to get people put back to work.
Let me talk about these two issues with you, Michael Wang. Particularly Republicans are saying, and I guess the Obama administration clearly is agreeing, that to go to the regulations that were promised for three years by the Obama administration would kill jobs and would present a wall to economic recovery. And how did you see that absolutely being the case?
You raise a lot of good questions, and certainly the previous speaker touched on a lot of key points. I want to make a few things real clear. Right now, the Bay Area, and for your listeners, it's important to understand, there are two issues that make healthful air and a clean environment. One is the standard, and the other is whether one attains the standard. And that's an important distinction. The standard is only important if you meet the standard and you attain it in the region. In the Bay Area, they're marginal for attainment now, which means you're doing everything you can to get to the current standard. So if you're doing everything you can to get to the current standard, making the standard even tighter won't reduce any emissions because you're doing that anyway. And so what the Obama administration tried to do is avoid making things tougher, because you're already doing everything now to get to a standard that was passed in 2008. What the Obama administration said is, wait a minute, if we just change the standard to 2008, and we're doing everything we can to get to that standard, and we're just barely getting there in the Bay Area, and for the rest of the nation, it probably won't get there.
Well, in fact, are we speaking just to the Bay Area here? Because certainly those who want the regulations to be in place and want them to be tougher are saying, and I think it was implied by what Bruce Nilles said, it's all at the expense of children, seniors, the infirm, asthmatics, and so forth, and their health.
Well, but again, the current standard is already at 80 ppb. And so what the Obama administration has said is, let's do everything we can to get to 80 ppb across the nation. Attainment of that standard is really important. And then I think the statement becomes, once you get there, let's look at what you have to do to go beyond. So it's not stopping improvement. It's maintaining the improvement to get to the current standard, not making the job tougher.
And how does not making it tougher save jobs, and how does it also ensure that the economy will do better?
Well, I think it gets down to, if you're doing everything you can to reduce emissions, and you're already creating that green technology to reduce emissions, you're doing everything you can now. What you're not doing by making the standard tighter is you're not forcing people to do things that don't make any sense by reducing emissions even further for things that aren't cost-effective, changing even more vehicles, changing even more fuels, reducing emissions even more, because the only thing you can do when you're doing all you can to reduce emissions is to shut down your operations, to reduce the number of hours you're in operation. And that's not what you want to do to an economy.
Bruce Nilles, do you think we're doing all we can, as has been pretty much stated here?
Well, I think your other guest is making one big mistake in his argument. The health standard that the Environmental Protection Agency was supposed to issue was supposed to be based on the latest science as to what is needed to protect people, including asthmatics, the elderly, other people with respiratory ailments, from dangerous levels of air pollution. That is a scientific question. When the Bush administration adopted the rule in 2008, for the very first time in the history of the Clean Air Act, they did not go along with a scientific recommendation from EPA scientists. They rejected the 60 to 70 range and came out with their 84 parts per billion. What we had been promised by Lisa Jackson and President Obama was that science was going to be back and decisions would be made on the science. So that is what did not happen last Friday, is the administration stepped in and said, we don't care what the science says. We're actually going to ignore the legal obligations we have to protect people and establish a safe standard. And if we look back at the history of the Clean Air Act, it's that critical first step of identifying what is needed to protect people that then provides the guidelines for investments in clean energy and the kind of investments we need to do more of, not less of. And again, so this really sets a pause on investments in clean energy at a critical time when we need more investments in clean energy, more creation of jobs, and this will essentially slow down that effort, which is obviously a very big deal, particularly for a place like the Bay Area.
Well, what about when someone like Eric Cantor says that you're ineffectively banning or restricting construction and industrial growth for much of the United States with the kind of standards that you're talking about?
Well, it's exactly that kind of hyperbole from the House Republicans that is not grounded in science and is not grounded in fact. And if we look at the 40 years of the Clean Air Act, we've seen enormous progress, usually led by California, whether it's making our cars cleaner, making our power plants cleaner, investments in wind and solar. And it's that kind of investment that has flowed from clear regulations that are protecting public health. And that is what we expected our president to stand up and defend. And our grave disappointment comes down to the fact that he was unwilling to stand up to the House Republicans like Eric Cantor, and say, wait a minute, clean air is critical for all of us, and we can do it and do it in a way that creates jobs and economic prosperity. And instead, he rolled over.
Well, Michael Wang, what about the science that we keep hearing from Bruce Nilles, the lower numbers being more scientific in terms of health, and also the promise by EPA head Lisa Jackson that those numbers would be pretty much pervasive throughout the United States?
Well, the science, what the EPA was faced with was a database that is being looked at the very, very minutest detail, at what they call the far end of the spectrum. If the current standard, which we're talking about, is 75, that's the current standard now that the National that the U.S. has to attain, okay, 75 parts per billion. The EPA proposal was to review the difference going from 75 to something less than that, from 75 to 60, kind of like a speed limit. At what point is safe safe? In 2008, 75 was deemed a safe number. In 1970s, in the 1970s when the Clean Air Act started, the number was 120. And so as science progresses, as we get better, you get a better idea of what is helpful and what is safe. But again, we're already at 75 as the standard. Emissions have to be reduced to that level, and we're doing everything we can to get to that level. So what incremental benefit might there be to go from 75 to 70 or 60 as what the proposal was when you can't even get to 75?
All right,
I'm going to
open the phone lines and invite our listeners to get involved in this issue, and also not only to put in your opinions here, if you would care to do that, but also raise any questions or comments in general that you might have. Again, President Obama angered environmentalists last week and asking the EPA to drop the development of tougher air quality rules. This will mainly affect the Midwest and the Great Plains, but really is relevant throughout the United States. And you've heard the arguments here back and forth. How do you feel? And certainly your questions or comments are welcome, and let me invite you to join us. Whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your phone call, so feel free to call us. Again, toll-free number 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, talking with Michael Wang, Manager Across Regional Issues and Legal Affairs for the Western States Petroleum Association, and Bruce Nillis, who is Deputy Conservation Director with the Sierra Club, and he oversees their coal campaign. Some emails rolling in. Here's Robert, who says, please don't narrowly define those who are outraged with the president's latest capitulation on clean air rules only as environmentalists. Doctors, teachers, truck drivers, children with asthma, human beings with lungs. Many of these citizens are also vexed by this president and don't define themselves as environmentalists. Fair enough. All right, here's another listener who says, seems to me that what ties these two segments together is that the environment is being sacrificed to rescue the economy. The poor and the middle class are disproportionately making the sacrifice. They use the parks and they live closer to freeways. Look for this pattern to be repeated over and over. And Bruce Nillis, when you said the president caved, what if the president said, his political, presumably, as well as his other advisors said, economic advisors said, well, it may seem like a cave, but we're doing this to help the economy.
This president knows better than that. Back when the president was in the Illinois legislature, I stood side by side with him when he introduced a bill to clean up coal-fired power plants in the state of Illinois. And he recounted a very real personal story about why clean air was important to him and his family and why it was important for all the people in Illinois. So he understands the need to protect clean air, but he made a crass political decision, and that has profound impacts. And back to your other guest's question about what does the increment of improvement mean that we're talking about, EPA laid it out in very cold numbers. The difference between the old Bush standard that is in place today that was not actually consistent with the science. It was the very first time any president had ever gone outside of the range as recommended by EPA scientists. But what going from that standard to what Lisa Jackson was proposing would have saved per year 8,000 people from dying, 3,800 people from having heart attacks, and 40,000 people from having asthma attacks. That is has can be quickly added up both in very personal terms but also economic terms, and why this rule was going to benefit both our economy and public health across this country.
Well, there will be a lawsuit, rest assured. There will be court challenges. But I wondered, Michael Wang, what you say to that. I mean, those numbers about dying and heart failure and asthma, and there certainly is public cost in that. I'm certain you recognize the fact that there are many who feel that big oil is not necessarily sensitive to these numbers and therefore tends to ignore them.
This isn't an oil industry or big business issue. This is an issue relative to how environment and economics has to work hand in hand. It's not either or. They have to work hand in hand. The public and your listeners have to understand that the current standard is being met, or people are trying to meet this stand, the current standard of 75, and they're doing everything they can to meet it. And so if you tighten the standard, yet you're doing everything you can to meet the current standard, what benefit can be derived? That's the question people have to understand. If I'm doing everything I can, putting scrubbers on coal-fired power plants, to get to the existing standard, and I still can't reach it, what more can I do? And how can I do that given the economics associated with what are the impacts if I have to do more than the best control? Do I have to turn down my facility? Do I have to relocate? Do I have to move my manufacturing sector to a place that somehow will allow me to because their air quality is somewhat different? That's the question that has to be before the House here.
Well,
it's both. Not either or.
I do want to go to our callers. I also want to mention, by the way, which many of you know, the Bay Area Air Quality Management District declared today a Spare the Air Day here in the Bay Area, and it's the fourth time this year that the agency has issued the warning for smog. And let me go to your calls. Brandon, you're our first caller. Good morning. Brandon, are you there? Okay. We'll move on. We'll go to another caller. Julius, good morning. You're on.
Hi. It's obvious that this latest move is the work of his new chief of staff, Bill Daley. I think that Bill Daley is going to lose the election for Obama. I'm curious about the reaction of your panel.
Bruce Nillis, you see the hand of Bill Daley here?
It is widely reported that Bill Daley was part of the political decision to overrule the scientists at EPA. And the way we view this is Sierra Club has 1.4 million members and supporters who were extraordinarily excited in 2008 and excited about what this president committed to do, and today are asking the very tough question about what does he stand for? Is he actually going to be willing to stand up and fight for clean air, for clean energy, and take on the House Republicans who don't believe in science and are doing everything they can to advance the agenda of the coal and oil industry? And your speaker talked about we're doing everything we can. Well, I can tell you, after spending 8 years working in coal-fired power plants, less than half of them, less than half, have modern pollution controls that have been around since the 1970s because of regulatory loopholes that they've been enjoying with abandon. So this notion that we're doing everything we can, A, is simply not true, and also belies the fact that California has seen enormous economic benefits in the past because it has been at the forefront of inventing the technologies and helping us achieve clean air, demonstrating how it is done, and that those jobs have been exported around the country. So essentially the president has hit pause on investments in clean energy, and that at this time is exactly the wrong signal to send to the economy.
And you say what, Michael Wang, to that assertion that coal power plants throughout the United States are not following, not doing enough that they can be doing with pollution control?
I think the, what Bruce is talking about is a difference, and this is a really tough technical argument. It has to do with the new source review and retrofit requirements that are part of the air quality program throughout the United States, both federal and at the state level. There is a difference between new sources that are required to put on the most current controls and existing sources that have to comply to retrofit levels. I think it's fair to say that as these levels get tightened, as the efforts to achieve the current standards work, that those older coal-fired power plants will have to put on retrofit controls. And that's just the nature of the regulatory system. It's an iterative process, and it's not something that comes with great speed, but it does. Those emissions do get reduced through time.
On we go to more callers. John, join us. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Just to clarify first, I'm a progressive, left-leaning person, and I just think that the gentleman from the Sierra Club, I mean, he is a partisan, single interest group type person who cares about one issue. You said he was working on the coal campaign. So it's one thing for him to come out here and, make all these comments. But President Obama has to govern for the whole country. He has to. I mean, the elections, you run to the center, you govern from the center. And, you know, he can have his point of view, but that's just an interest group voicing, just like there are a gazillion interest groups out there. And, you know, the second comment I wanted to make was what's being debated here is not what will actually happen, but what the standards are. And that's not, you know, just because you set a standard doesn't mean you're suddenly going to attain all these health benefits that was mentioned by the Sierra Club person. It just isn't going to happen automatically. This is just about setting standards, which will be set, you know, over time. So I'll take my responses off the air.
All right. And again, Bruce Nilles actually oversees the Beyond Coal campaign for the Sierra Club. Let's get a response from you, Bruce Nilles.
Well, I mean, I think if we look back to the last time science-based health standards were adopted, it was by President Clinton. So I sort of reject the notion that this is an issue that the president can't do because somehow it's inconsistent with economic growth. We obviously saw a lot of economic growth back during those years. But more importantly, and this goes back to Michael's point when he says, he makes the allegation that, well, we've done everything we can to clean up our air, and that's simply not true. We have 1930 vintage coal plants putting out hundreds of tons of pollution every day with profound impacts on the people that live next to them. We have people living in the Bay Area and even more in the Central Valley where all the car pollution from the Bay Area ends up blowing, who are ending up in the emergency room. This is not a partisan issue. This is about the best science, which has evolved, and EPA scientists' recommendation that we establish a standard that we then spend the next 5 to 6 years attaining. But if we don't have a standard about which against which to measure our progress, what are we shooting for? And again, what the president has done is essentially say for 2 years, we're just going to stop making progress. And that is a huge setback in the 40 years of the Clean Air Act.
Well, you mentioned the Central Valley. I want to bring a caller on from Modesto. And Jonathan, thanks for waiting. Join us here. You're on.
Good morning. So, yeah, my frustration is echoing that. I don't understand how you can say we're doing all we can. I don't believe that we're doing all we can. What we're doing is the same as we have been doing for the past 30 years. It's time for a systemic change in both government and industry together, deciding, you know what, we need to make this change, we need to invest, and that same investment will create those jobs that you are so trying to keep, to protect through your non-action. And so I'm a little frustrated at the concept of the notion that we're doing everything we can. We're not doing everything we can. We're doing everything that we can with the current method. So I'll take my comments off there.
Okay, Michael Wang, you still want to stand behind doing everything we can?
Oh, yeah. If your listeners and readers ought to look at the air quality measurements over the past 50 years, they are all diminishing even as we speak, even in spite of an increase in population and vehicles. If you look at the data, look at the numbers, look at exposure in the city, look at exposure in the rural communities, reductions in emissions of upwards of 60% and 70% with the tightest regulations in the world. That is undebatable. California and the West has the toughest standards in the world, the toughest fuel standards, the toughest vehicle standards, and for people to say we haven't done anything is just not being not either being aware or not being understanding of the current regulatory.
I think it's a question of semantics, not doing enough or not doing everything.
Well,
that can
if you're
be done.
Doing, if the tightest standards in the world are getting us barely to the current national standard of 75. If those are the tightest standards we know how to do, then what we ought to do is keep those standards and keep looking for more. But it still will only get you maybe to 75, which is what the president said.
Michael,
let's go from there.
Michael Wang, actually William, one of our listeners, says 75 ppb of what? What pollutant is being measured? If there was
good
no
question.
Industry whatsoever, what is the baseline reading?
Good question. The baseline reading somewhere, depending on where you are, what clean air is, whether you're on the ocean, what we're talking about is 75 ppb of ozone. Clean air is about 35 to 40 ppb. That's the cleanest in California coming off the ocean. Other parts of the U.S. have seen clean air defined as 50, 40, 60, depending on where they are. And so the difference between 75 where we are and background is the problem that some people have been pointing to.
And Bruce Nellis, here's a listener, Joe, who says, I've never understood how making stricter EPA air quality standards hurts jobs and economic development. If you make stricter air standards, wouldn't highly polluting industries hire more people in an effort to find ways to meet those goals and invest more in cleaner technologies, thus driving the growth of an industry and helping the economy? Pretty much what you've been saying, isn't it?
I think that's exactly right, and I think we're seeing some examples that are close to home for the Bay Area, which is as we have required the cleanup of some of the coal plants, far from all of them in the United States, and we are seeing reckoned investments in wind and solar, a lot of it being developed within your listener territory. We are seeing records number of people being employed in wind and solar to the point today there are more people employed in wind and solar than there are in the business of mining and burning coal. And so there's enormous job opportunity here if, as we continue to make progress and ratchet down on dangerous levels of air pollution. And back to Michael's point, which is we have made progress over the years. We have become smarter and cleaner and made innovation progress precisely because EPA has historically updated their standards on a regular basis. It's now been 14 years since President Clinton adopted the last science-based standard. And so Bush set us back over 8 years, and now we have President Obama following that lead and saying, science be damned.
Michael Wang, final word from you as we come to the close here.
I think people have to remember that progress toward clean air is an evolutionary thing, and everybody has to keep working at it. Business and environment can work hand in hand, and we have to do it quickly, and we have to do it in a manner that creates jobs and keeps the environment whole. And that can be done. We have a history of doing that, and it will continue.
Well, you can continue this conversation by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I want to thank Michael Wang, who is Manager across Regional Issues and Legal Affairs for the Western States Petroleum Association, and Bruce Nellis, Deputy Conservation Director for the Sierra Club, oversees the Beyond Coal campaign for them. Another hour of Forum coming your way. In the hour ahead, we're going to shift gears and we're going to talk with neurobiologist and psychiatrist Samuel Brundis, who's written a book called Making Sense of People, Decoding the Mysteries of Personality. Thanks to Senior Editor Dan Zolan, to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Polly Stryker, our engineers, Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.